Ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is October 30th, 2025. And our top story this morning, it was hard to pick a top story this morning because we are drinking from the freaking fire hose today. There was so much news came out between yesterday morning and this point here that it was hard to make a title today. It really was. But let's start with the big one. Big tech earnings. We had earnings yesterday from Google, Microsoft, and Meta. And they were generally good. Generally, there were some gray linings to that silver cloud, if you will. But the big thing, everybody's kind of scratching their head at the investors' reactions to it. The stocks are moving in different directions from otherwise very similar earnings. All right, so generally, they were mostly beats. Meta was the one exception. Meta was not an earnings beat because they took a $15 to a $16 billion one-time charge for taxes. All right, that really hit Meta, it seems. Now, look, big growth in all of their cloud revenue and all the typical things that they always report magnificent growth in. That story is largely intact, as well as they all announced increases in their CapEx. So the great game of CapEx chicken, where they light money on fire in a contest to see, you know, who can destroy the most investor wealth at the same time, that's still going on. So it wasn't a bubble popper yesterday. They didn't all announce cuts in their CapEx. But the stocks are moving differently. It's very interesting to watch here. First of all, Google is ripping up 7 to 9%. It's been varying a little bit. Google just reported pretty solid numbers across the board. Their YouTube numbers looked good. Cloud growth looked good. No surprises from Google. All right, so they're the best performer here. They also increased their CapEx. Now, Microsoft had very similar report to Google. As a matter of fact, you go look at the numbers between Microsoft and Google, they're almost interchangeable. They're almost indistinguishable. Big growth all around, and yet Microsoft stock is down. It's only down about 1% to 2%. It was down at most 5% yesterday morning. But I'll be honest with you, I can't look at these two things and say what's different. Microsoft did, strangely, they took a $1 billion charge associated with their investments in OpenAI and this recent deal to go for profit. Somehow on paper, the accountants say that means Microsoft lost $1 billion on that. Don't ask me how that works. But otherwise, I can't for the life of me figure out why Microsoft was down. Meta is getting clobbered. The last I looked, Meta was down 10.5%. That $15 billion tax charge, obviously playing a big role there. We saw something similar with Netflix. Netflix took a big one-time tax charge in Brazil. That clobbered their earnings. We saw their stock down significantly on that also earlier this year. But Meta also leaned heavily, arguably the most heavily, into CapEx. And, you know, look, Meta lights money on fire like nobody we've ever seen. Even among big tech, they're all lighting money on fire. Meta has always been like the hold my beer of that group. So my question is, and it's more of a question than a commentary this morning, are investors fed up with this great game of CapEx chicken? There are some signs that they are, in particular Microsoft. Again, I cannot for the life of me figure out why Microsoft is down, as well as a lot of other people can't really figure out why Microsoft is down on this, unless people are sick and tired of the money going up in smoke and no return on the investment, which none of them are showing. Other than that, it's not a bubble burster, guys. That's the one takeaway. I mean, yeah, two of the three stocks are down here. One is down big, but the third is up big. And there's just not a lot of differences between these reports. Let's also talk about the Fed. That was a big story happened yesterday. The Fed cut 25 basis points as expected. But Jay Powell struck something of a hawkish tone, very lightly hawkish. There's some doubts about December rate cuts now. Heading into this meeting, December was viewed as a sure thing. Now, not so much. There was two dissensions on this rate cut. One guy, Steve Moran, wanted to cut by 50 basis points, but the other dissension didn't want to cut at all. And Powell had mentioned that there was a growing chorus of people who are saying, due to the lack of data, government shutdown, maybe we should hold here. So now people are wondering, is that cut in December that we had already priced in maybe not going to happen? So the market is adjusting their expectations there. Also big news yesterday from the Federal Reserve, the end of quantitative tightening in December. The Fed will stop destroying money. Now, this is interesting because they only unwound maybe a third to a half of all of the money they printed after COVID. So they're ending QT, in my opinion, way too early. They're not getting rid of most of the money that they created. Although there's already signs of problems in the banking system because of that QT. So, I mean, I understand why they're doing it. I just disagree with it. But the big one is that even though they're going to stop quantitative tightening, they're going to continue the MBS runoff, mortgage-backed securities. Now, for the last few years, as the Fed has been doing their quantitative tightening, they haven't actually been selling mortgage-backed securities. As they mature, they're just taking the money back and destroying it. They're going to continue letting those MBS slowly tick off their balance sheet. But what they're going to do, instead of quantitative tightening, they're going to take the proceeds of that money, and instead of burning it, they're going to put it into treasury bills. In other words, they're going to change the composition of their balance sheet from more MBS to more treasury bills. It's still neutral. The total amount of reserves in the system is unchanged. So they're neither printing nor destroying money in this situation. They're just moving it from one place to another. Now, that means even though the Fed is cutting rates and even though the Fed is balance sheet neutral, as far as the mortgage market is concerned, that is a hawkish move there. That's going to put upward pressure on mortgages, even as the Fed is cutting their interest rates. In other words, more problems in the housing market. So all you young people who are looking at the housing market wondering, when am I going to be able to afford a house? I don't freaking know. That's certainly not going to help. It's not going to help mortgage rates. It's not going to help with payments. Again, the Fed has no business owning these mortgage-backed securities in the first place. So, you know, arguably it is good that they're getting out of that business. But I can tell you the home builders yesterday were not happy with this. D.R. Horton, Toll Brothers, Lennar all sold off about 2.5% like in an instant when that was announced during Jay Powell's comments yesterday. By the way, also, Powell, when he was talking about running the more money into treasury bills, he mentioned tightness in money markets. Ooh, pay attention to that. That basis trade, those people that pick up pennies in front of the steamroller, that's caused problems before. It caused problems during COVID. It caused problems during, the Volmageddon back in 2018. It caused problems in the UK pension system in 2022. Now Powell sees signs of it. And that's why he's rolling those MBS proceeds into treasury bills. I've got my friend Joe Brown from Heresy Financial is coming on the channel next week to talk about these liquidity happenings here. Pay attention, guys. Even as these bankruptcies and things are happening in the private credit space, we're seeing some problems in the bond market as well. Another big story today, China trade deal. We're finally getting some details on this. China's going to buy soybeans. They're going to ship some rare earths, but they're going to keep some of the restrictions on. They say they're going to do a thing about fentanyl. Gee, have we ever heard that before? I don't know. Yeah, we have. But the U.S. says we're going to cut our fentanyl tariffs in half. Some of the threats of 100% tariffs, those are gone. The fees on Chinese shipping is going away. A lot of details on the trade war. We're going to give you both the U.S. and Chinese readouts of that one. Shout out to Mish, who did an excellent job researching that one this morning. Fiserv yesterday. What the hell happened with Fiserv? This is a crazy story. This company runs financial plumbing, right? Every time you swipe a card, Fiserv makes a fraction of a penny on the fees associated with that. A big miss in earnings yesterday, and that stock was down more than 45%. A financial plumbing company being cut in half in one day. That's some 2020s bingo shit right there. So it was very much a WTF moment here. Look, the former... Something happened. They had a new CEO took over in May. He looked in the books and he said, we've got too much optimistic appraisals of the situation in Argentina built into this here, resetting expectations. They restate their growth forecasts. They miss on earnings. Stock gets clobbered. Oh, and by the way, the guy he took over for, the former CEO, he is now the head of the IRS and the Social Security Administration as part of the Trump administration. Oh, good. That's what's the worst that could happen there. Fiserv also changed their CFO, new directors on the board, new co-presidents, like the whole management team has been kicked out, new guys coming in, a mess in that company. Keep an eye on Fiserv. Something stinks there. Carvana reported great results. The market says, we don't believe you. We think you're full of it. Carvana stock down big. Chipotle Mexican Grill telling us what we already knew. Young consumers are broke and can't afford to eat out. GM is laying off another 1,700 people in their electric vehicle division. South Korea is going to build a nuclear submarine right here in Philadelphia in the U.S. as part of that deal, something we saw coming on this channel. And we have another 2020s bingo update at the end of the show here. This one not nearly as funny as the one from yesterday. This one's actually pretty serious, but we got to talk about it. Guys, again, we are going to drink from the fire hose this morning. We got a lot of news to get to. We're going to go really fast today. So grab your coffee, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do that every day. But we got to shrink my big melon of a head and get through this stuff this morning. The S&P 500 is down 25 points. 0.37% lower, big tech earnings contributing, maybe the details of that China deal contributing, and certainly the hawkish tone from Jerome Powell yesterday contributing. The Dow is also down by 145 points, or 0.3% lower, and the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, off by 0.55%, 142 points in the red for the NASDAQ, big tech weighing on that one this morning. The DXY sharply higher here by 51 basis points. This is pretty interesting. I think this has a lot to do with the Japanese yen this morning. The Japanese yen is weakening significantly. Japan, the BOJ over there, their central bank, they left interest rates unchanged. Keep an eye on the yen here, guys. I don't have that chart brought up because I just have way too many windows and tabs open this morning. But that's driving this big move in the Dixie here. This is going to put some downward pressure on asset prices, some downward pressure on metals as well. Dollar is a lot stronger this morning. Looking over at the bond market, look at this move in long-term yields. The Federal Reserve cut rates and interest rates on the long end of the curve rose. We have seen this every time. This is the market telling us inflation is not yet solved. We still have an inflation problem, even though you're playing your stupid games at the Fed. The 30-year Treasury, 4.654. That's higher by 5.5 points this morning. The 10-year, 4.111, up by another 5 points and change. It was up almost 10 points yesterday. Big move in the 10-year over the last 48 hours. The 2-year at 3.631, up 4.5 points. And the 1-month at 3.929. That's actually down 3 points here. Again, the Fed just cut, and the 1-month is most affected by that cut. Looking over at the metals market, some interesting things happening in metals this morning. Look at the difference between New York and London. So let's start with gold. We've got spot gold, $39.75. That's higher by $44, almost $45, or 1.14%. That's your London price, but your December New York price here, December futures contract, $39.86. That's down $13, or a third of a percent. We haven't really seen the difference in price moves that much with gold here, but there it is this morning. And in silver, it's even worse. Spot silver in London, 48.26. That's higher by 69 cents or 1.45%. Yet December silver contracts in New York, $48 even, higher by just 9 cents or 19. We noticed this yesterday. We said that silver had gone back into backwardation. It was just barely after a few days in contango where the future price was more expensive than the spot price, as is normal. They came back into alignment, and now we're actually seeing the London price rise faster than New York again, and we're about 30 cents, 25 cents in backwardation here again. So this is indicative that maybe the supply in London is starting to get tight again. We had a big wave of metal left New York and went to London, alleviated the shortage. We saw a price correction of about 15%. It was a pretty violent price correction in metals last week. But now we're starting to see early signs of that coming back. Now, I want to temper that enthusiasm because one place we're not seeing it is in the SLV and the cost to borrow. All right, SLV shares to borrow, there's a 500,000 shares available at just 1.81%. When we had the shortage in London, that was over 24% and there was nothing available. All right, so we were still nothing like what we saw 2 weeks ago with the drastic shortage happening at the LBMA. However, that movement in price this morning, I can't overlook that. We're starting to see early signs of yet another monster move in metals. Maybe we'll have to have Bob Coleman on the channel to talk about that one again very soon. Oh, by the way, I like the shiny. I don't know if you guys ever heard that, but I do. I really like the shiny. Copper down 3% after hitting an all-time high yesterday. Platinum off by 1.4%. Palladium off by 1.25%. So platinum and palladium not participating in this silver rally that we have. I use the term lightly, the silver rally, because New York is only up a fraction of a penny. But we got red for the PGM metals. And WTI crude oil is at $59.76 for December futures. That's off by about 72 cents or 1.2% lower this morning. Bitcoin had a rough day. It's had a rough couple of days here. Now 108,338. We've now in our fourth day of this little sell-off where I drew a very bad squiggly there. About 4 days of sell-off after about 5 days of rally. So is Bitcoin going to continue its downward trend here, or are we going to bounce off of this level once again and resume higher? Maybe I should draw a few more squiggles, or I could just say, I don't know. But as always, be careful on leverage. Bitcoin winter is here. I know the Bitcoin permables hate when I say that, but guys, I got to call it like I see it. All right, let's talk about what's going on with the big tech earnings. This article is pretty good. It's a long one, but it captures everything in one fell swoop. Meta and Microsoft test investors with 89% AI-fueled spending surge. Testing investors. I think that's a pretty accurate headline here, and it is unclear how investors feel about it at this moment. The largest tech companies are betting on an AI future powered by gigantic data centers filled with humming servers. Now that the staggering cost of this push is coming into sharper focus, it's testing nerves on Wall Street. Three bellwethers from different corners of the tech world, Alphabet, Meta, and Microsoft together racked up some $78 billion in CapEx last quarter. That's up from 89. That's up 89% from a year earlier. Oh my God, they're just burning more money. Most of that cash was destined for data center construction and GPUs and other gear to fill them. Each increased their forecast for future outlays. That was enough to rattle investors conditioned to expect enormous spending. Meta shares slid 8.3% and Microsoft was down 2.7% in early trading Thursday following the company's disclosures of their expenditures as part of quarterly reports. Meta warned that 2026 spending would be notably larger than in 2025. That's the thing. Meta down the most this morning, and they're the ones who are increasing the most. Meta also took that tax charge there, so it's hard to attribute this sell-off in Meta. It could be the tax thing like it was the case with Netflix, or it could be worries about CapEx. Though Google investors largely took its capital increase in stride, sending the shares up more than 7% in pre-market trading, the trio of reports renewed questions over whether a bubble is forming. On a conference call with Microsoft executive Bernstein analyst Mark Mordler asked if they were confident that the AI investments would pay off, or frankly, are we in a bubble? Microsoft CFO Amy Hood reiterated that the company can't meet current demand, largely because it's being paid for by Oracle and OpenAI and NVIDIA's round tripping, for AI and other services, even after spending tens of billions of dollars in recent quarters. I thought we were going to catch up. We are not. Demand is increasing. It is not increasing in just one place. It's increasing across many places, namely OpenAI, Oracle, and NVIDIA. Microsoft helped kick off the AI boom by backing OpenAI with a $13 billion investment that was almost entirely made up of data center credits. See my video about the funny money propping up the AI bubble. And the software giant's data center build-out is seen as key to maintaining leadership in the AI field. Still, the company surprised investors by notching a record $34.9 billion in CapEx during the September quarter. The Azure Cloud Computing Division, Microsoft's main vehicle for recouping those investments, saw revenue continue to rise at a rapid clip, but at about the same rate as the prior quarter. All right, so the growth is no longer increasing. Maybe that explains why Microsoft not doing so well here. Alphabet's Google, meanwhile, gave a more encouraging outlook. The company said its Gemini AI assistant now has 650 million monthly active users, up 44% from 3 months ago. That number's misleading because every time you Google something now, you get an AI result whether you want it or not. Is that counted as a monthly active user? We're not paying anything for it, so that's worth keeping in mind there. And the Google Cloud platform has bagged more billion-dollar deals in the first 9 months of 2025 than in the prior 2 years, CFO Anat Ashkenazi. Ashkem, how to pronounce his last name. Google revenue rose 34% to $15.2 billion, beating the $14.8 billion estimate. Google's expenses also are climbing. The company expects its CapEx to be as much as $93 billion this year, up from previous estimates of $85. There's another increase in CapEx there. Investors will get a clearer picture of the cloud computing industry on Thursday when market leader Amazon is scheduled to post its results, and Apple is also slated to give quarterly numbers that afternoon. Of the three companies reporting Wednesday, Meta offered the most jarring picture, though. In addition to posting an eye-popping $16 billion tax charge, the company warned that capital spending would grow at a significantly faster clip next year. Unlike Microsoft and Google, Meta isn't a major cloud computing provider to outside customers. That means its spending spree could be riskier. If Microsoft and Google overestimate the need for AI services, they already have a way to sell excess computing power to others. I beg to differ there. And that external demand remains healthy, but companies reported enormous increases in their backlogs, a tally that represents what customers have committed to spend in the future. With Meta, the AI payoff is less clear. The company, which is infusing AI services into Instagram and Facebook, said the investments will help it better target advertising. That's the main source of revenue for the Menlo Park, California company. The company also faces concerns about spending in its Reality Labs division. Oh, yeah, the metaverse, remember that, which makes AI smart glasses and other wearable devices. The business reported a loss of $4.4 billion for the third quarter, with revenue of just $470 million. All right, guys, that was a lot to get through in that article, but it did a pretty good job covering three earnings in one, so it saved us some time. Alphabet ripping this morning, higher by 7%, $294.54. A 7% increase in a $3.3 trillion company. That's a lot of freaking market cap getting added over at Alphabet. Microsoft, on the other hand, not doing so hot. Down 2% here, $530, $531 now, off by about 10 bucks. A 2% drop in a $4 trillion company. Again, that's a lot of market cap there, heading in the other direction, though. And the big one this morning, Meta, down 10.25% here. $674.80 for Meta Platforms, off by 76 bucks, a 10% drop in a $1.9 trillion company. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, a lot of movement here. So I'll be honest with you guys. I don't really know. There's like no short synopsis here other than one big question mark about these big tech earnings. Let me know in the comments your thoughts on what we're seeing here. But I can tell you for a fact, the great game of CapEx chicken is still going. So don't expect a big miss from NVIDIA all of a sudden because big tech slowed their CapEx. That ain't happening. Meanwhile, we got the Federal Reserve. Fed lowers rates, but Powell suggests the move may be the last of 2025. So a dovish move with some hawkish rhetoric attached yesterday, and the market didn't really like it. A policy divide within the U.S. central bank and a lack of federal government data may put another interest rate cut out of reach this year, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said on Wednesday, as he acknowledged the threats that officials see to the job market, but also the risky nature of making further rate moves without a fuller picture of the economy. Let's read one more here. The Fed on Wednesday cut interest rates by a quarter percentage point as expected as a way to temper any further weakening of the job market, but the central bank's new policy statement included several references to the lack of official data during a federal government shutdown. And Powell told reporters that later that policymakers are likely to become more cautious if it deprives them of further job and inflation reports. So Jay Powell putting a little political pressure on the Donald here. If you want your rate cuts that you've been banging the table for, then you better reopen the government. That's interesting. A slightly political maneuver there by an apolitical or supposedly apolitical Fed. Beyond the data issues, though, Powell said there were strongly differing views among his Fed colleagues about the appropriate path for monetary policy moving forward, with a growing chorus now feeling like maybe this is where we should at least wait a cycle before cutting rates again. Financial markets responded to Powell's remarks by reducing bets on another rate cut at the Fed's December 9th and 10th meeting, a prospect now given roughly 2-to-1 odds, with the S&P 500 ending the day largely flat after giving up earlier gains. Powell explicitly signaled a break between this and future meetings as he manages a policy setting committee that agreed to consecutive rate cuts in September and October, even as many of its members remain concerned that inflation is expected to rise through the remainder of 2025, said Michael Pierce, deputy chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics. And we got more developments from the Fed here. The Fed to end balance sheet runoff December 1st amid a funding crisis. This is interesting here, especially for home builders. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday said it will stop shrinking its treasury holdings beginning December 1st, ending a three-year-long effort after stress signals and money markets intensified in recent days. Pay attention, guys. The bond market is starting to make funny noises, even as these bankruptcies are happening. The central bank said it will stop unwinding treasury holdings, currently at a pace of $5 billion a month, but will continue the runoff of its portfolio of mortgage-backed securities by about $35 billion a month. That's a number they have not once hit since they started this whole thing, but I digress. It will reinvest the proceeds in treasury bills in line with its goal to return to a portfolio consisting primarily of treasuries, Chair Jerome Powell said at a press conference after the policy decision. Wednesday's announcement was a reversal for the Fed, which until recently indicated that a decision on the end of the runoff, known as quantitative tightening, was months away. Some things have been happening for some time now, showing a gradual tightening in money market conditions, really in the last, call it 3 weeks or so. You've seen more significant tightening. Okay, that's, I don't want to say alarmist, but as far as Jerome Powell's typical everything is okay rhetoric, that does count as alarmist. So Powell signaling some problems in money markets, diverting funds from mortgages to T-bills to try to compensate for that. That tells me there's something wrong with the basis trade there. I'm not very fluent in these things, though, so I couldn't tell you. But one thing I can tell you, the fact that they're going to let MBS continue to run off the balance sheet did not sit well with the home builders. D.R. Horton sold off 3.5% on that news yesterday. Let's look at Lennar, the other big home builder. They sold off 3.1% on that news yesterday. Also down another 1% this morning. By the way, this big sell-off right here, that was like on the dot when those Fed statements were released. One last one. Let's look at Toll Brothers, another home builder. They, too, did not like what Jay Powell said yesterday. They sold off about 2% as well. Opening bell just rang, selling off another 0.9% this morning. Home builders, no likey. The fact that the Fed is going to keep that MBS rolling off, not good for the housing market. All right, now we got to talk about what's going on with China. I told you guys, drinking from the fire hose today. Rare earth stocks rally as China delays export controls after Trump-Xi meeting. Not going to spend too much time on the rare earths, but that was a big one. There was a lot of worries in the auto market because of that. But interesting, the Chinese are going to send us rare earths, but the American rare earth stocks are rallying on this news. Maybe they were worried that this deal was going to flood the market with rare earths. Apparently, that's not the case because names like MP Materials are up big this morning on this news. So there's still some limits on rare earths, but not too many. That's the takeaway there. Zero Hedge had some pretty good summary here this morning of the trade deal, all caps. So I'm guessing this came from a Bloomberg terminal. Bessent says China is going to buy 25 million metric tons of soybeans per year for the next 3 years. They also said China was going to buy 12 million tons this year. That's only about half of what they bought last year. They bought 24 million. So some relief for soybean farmers, but still a big chunk of their market share they lost. They're going to have to lower their price to sell the rest of their crops somewhere else. But at least some relief for the farmers here. China's going to, they're committing to buying 25 million for the next 3 years. That is at least until the next dictator throws a fit or the next president throws a fit and they decide to have the trade war again. But for now, a truce. Let's see. Other countries are going to buy 19 million metric tons of soybeans. It's just trying to push the relief for the farmers there. Expect a TikTok deal to go forward in a few weeks. So that was attached. The U.S. has agreed to cut in half their fentanyl-related tariffs on Chinese goods. In return, China is going to stop the flow of fentanyl precursors to the United States. I'll believe that when I see it. China committed to reducing the precursor flow of fentanyl. Yeah, right. U.S. suspending the new rule on the entity list. I don't know exactly what that is. I can tell you anybody who's been added to the entity list in the last couple of months has either been a state sponsor of terrorism or a company trying to get chips into China. So maybe some easing of the export controls on semiconductors there. Also, China's Xi unilaterally expressed interest in a U.S. pipeline project in Alaska. That's the second story about this Alaska to Russia pipeline I've seen in the last couple of months. I don't really get that. I think that's just one of Trump's pet projects, but I digress. And also, China deal signatures possible next week. All right, that's the U.S. readout. Here's the China readout from David Lee. The U.S. canceled the 10% fentanyl tariff. China will adjust countermeasures, likely meant U.S. agricultural product tariffs. The U.S. suspended the BIS 50% rule for 1 year. China suspended the rare earth export control for 1 year. I interpret that as chips for rare earths. U.S. suspended the 301 investigation on maritime logistics. So that was the additional fees on Chinese-built ships. That is going to be suspended. China is going to suspend their largely symbolic countermeasures on American ships. There aren't really many American ships because we stopped building ships a long time ago. What else do we have here? The U.S. will cancel the so-called fentanyl tariff of 10%. The U.S. will suspend implementation of the 50% penetration rule. We talked about that. The U.S. will suspend the 301. Okay, in addition, the two sides reached consensus on the anti-drug cooperation of fentanyl, the expansion of trade in agricultural products, and the handling of cases of related enterprises. So that you can kind of see the difference between the U.S. and the Chinese readout here. There are some similarities. So, guys, this is a one-year truce. This is not the end of the trade deal. It's not a taco. It's not a GIACO. Some people are trying to, like, create a G acronym for the taco thing. Everybody walked away a little bit grumpy from this, which is how most negotiations typically end. I don't know that anybody really wins here. That's pretty much the end of that one, or at least for now. We'll see until somebody else throws a fit. Also, Fiserv's massive earnings shortfall baffles analysts, sends stocks tumbling. By the way, I want to send a shout out to my friend Melody Wright. Melody's got an excellent YouTube channel and a great Substack. She is just a wealth of information. She used to work with this company in some of her prior jobs. So we had a long conversation yesterday about Fiserv. This one's got us both scratching our heads, to be honest with you. Not really sure what's going on here, but Fiserv's massive earnings shortfall baffled analysts even as it dealt a crushing blow to the company's shares. The financial technology giant stock plunged a record 47% after the company slashed its outlook for full-year earnings and unveiled third-quarter results that fell short of Wall Street's mostly rosy expectations. Shares of other payment-related companies also tumbled. The results are impossible to sugarcoat, said William Blair's Andrew Jeffrey, who downgraded the stock to market perform, saying they can no longer recommend the company. Fiserv's fall from grace is bound to raise a host of uncomfortable questions for both the firm's executives and the analysts who cover the stock. For many on Wall Street, the company's massive miss came out of the blue. Nearly 80% of the 37 analysts covering Fiserv had buy ratings as of Tuesday. On Wednesday, Fiserv said revenue from its financial services division fell 3% in the third quarter, while its margins plummeted to 42.5%, down 5 percentage points from the same period a year earlier. Financial solutions is decelerating, and so the issue seems more systemic across Fiserv, said Ball. People don't know what the valuation floor is anymore. In an earlier note to clients, Ball said he does not see as the company as an investable asset and reiterated his sell rating. So not covered in this article, though, is the fact that Fiserv has a new CEO. The prior CEO left in May. Now he runs the Social Security Administration and the IRS for Donald Trump. Oh, good. What's the worst that could happen? The new CEO who took over in May announced yesterday, hey, we opened up the books and there were some exceedingly excessive, optimistic growth projections built into the guidance. They drastically cut that guidance and it was a huge miss. So something with the old executive team was way off. They were not telling the truth about something. I think it has to do with unrealistic growth projections for Argentina, because Argentina's inflation came way down, but the prior executive team did not adjust their growth expectations as that inflation was coming down. I think there's other issues going on at this company, though. They fired their CFO. They got new co-presidents. They have new directors on the board of directors, changing out the executive team, restating their guidance, big miss, just a disaster. And these two comments I have highlighted here, people don't know what the floor is. It's uninvestable. People are trying to handicap what they can't see. Once you realize the prior executive team is full of shit, you now have to question every number you've been fed so far. And of course, people are like, rather than do that, I'm just going to sell the stock. And so it sold off more than 45% yesterday. It's down another 6% this morning. So, I mean, this thing is just in free fall. Guys, this is a financial plumbing stock, a boring name that makes a fraction of a penny every time somebody swipes a card somewhere. We're going to hear more about this one. Keep a pin in that one. Carvana revenue up as retail units sold jump. Not going to spend too much time on this. Shout out to my friend Lox Ganapathy from Unicus Research, who nailed this one. Carvana reported tremendous, amazing results yesterday, and nobody believes them because the stock is down 14%. How is your stock down 14% on amazing results? The market is saying, we think you're full of shit. That's what the market's saying. Because Tricolor is bankrupt. First Brands is bankrupt. Primalend is bankrupt. First Help is now having trouble. Anybody dealing with subprime auto is either bankrupt or about to be. And yet Carvana's like, oh, record sales. We're doing so great. We're wonderful, amazing. One of these things is not like the other. So is Carvana the best, most smoothly run business in history? Or are their executives full of it? The market has placed their votes. Meanwhile, Chipotle struggles as low-income young consumers pull back. Tell me something I don't know. Millennials, Gen Zers, they are broke because inflation has punished them the most. The company turned its same-store sales positive by 0.3% in the third quarter, though transactions remain negative. And that goes that byline there. We don't need to keep reading here, guys. Same-store sales were just barely positive, but transactions were negative, which means they raised their prices and fewer people came to the restaurant. And this is a restaurant that deals almost exclusively with younger people. And so the company's in trouble. They're lowering their guidance. Chipotle getting clobbered here. Look at this name, down 18.25%. By the way, this is a restaurant chain. Restaurants are notoriously tight margin businesses. And this thing was trading at like 37 times earnings. That's just obscene, guys. Valuations, I realize it's 2025 and oh, my AI bubble and nobody looks at valuations anymore, but a restaurant chain at 37 times earnings, gag me. Math matters, guys. Sooner or later, math matters. Meanwhile, GM laying off more than 1,700 people at sites in Michigan and Ohio, citing EV concerns. Again, we're not going to get into this one in too much detail. EV was a bubble. We knew it was a bubble here on this channel. It didn't matter what Cathie Wood said. We could all see it coming. Now we've got thousands more people, hundreds more people being laid off in Michigan and Ohio. General Motors took a big charge on their earnings because of this backtracking of scaling back of their EV plans. This is across the automotive space, guys. So this is the latest thing, more people losing their jobs in the auto market. Also, something we saw coming on this channel as well. Trump says South Korea will build a nuclear submarine in the United States. We've been talking about shipbuilding quite a bit here, especially with this South Korean trade deal. And now we have some details. President Trump says he has given South Korea permission to build a nuclear-powered submarine following trade negotiations in the country, saying in a post on Truth Social that our military alliance is stronger than ever before. There was previously a non-proliferation treaty with the South Korean that forbade them from building nuclear submarines. We are getting rid of that and saying you can go ahead and build those subs now. Trump followed up in a separate post to say that the submarine would be built in Philadelphia. Shipbuilding in our country will soon be making a big comeback, he wrote. It's unclear what the timeline for such a project would be. I can tell you that shipyard in Philadelphia, guys, it is a skeleton of what it used to be. The old Philly Navy Yard and Philly Shipyard there, it's largely a rust bucket these days, quintessential like East Coast Rust Belt. That being said, South Korea looks like they're going to be investing money to revitalize that shipyard. And by the way, only about 3 hours north of Philadelphia is Groton, Connecticut, where General Dynamics is building nuclear submarines right now. And they're behind schedule trying to deliver the submarines for that AUKUS deal with the US, Australia, and the UK. So while South Korea is going to be investing in this shipyard here in Philly, they'll be building these nuclear submarines. I think that's also going to help us catch up on that treaty with the Australians and the UK to start cranking out these subs a little bit faster. The news followed earlier announcements about trade and investment plans between the two countries. The U.S. and South Korea affirmed that Seoul is investing $350 billion in the U.S. following months of trade talks, including how that money will be distributed. Still no word on that swap line, though. We still haven't heard about that. And again, it makes sense, guys, because Hanwha acquires Philly Shipyard. This was back in June of last year. Hanwha acquires Philly Shipyard, expanding its footprint in global shipbuilding and deployment of naval systems. So the South Koreans already own that shipyard in Philadelphia. Now they're going to be reinvesting into it, scaling it up. They'll be building submarines there, probably with the help of companies like General Dynamics, who owns the shipyard in Groton, Connecticut. So some shipbuilding going on there. And last but not least, guys, on a sobering note here, we got this one from Polymarket this morning. Trump orders Department of War to detonate nuclear bombs to test their quality. Well, crap. Look, the Russians have pulled out of the nuclear treaty. They're resuming tests, and now we're resuming tests. Look, the Cold War is not something I'm in a hurry to repeat. I don't know about you guys, you know, like not wondering if nuclear war was going to kill us all in our sleep. I didn't live through that. I was a kid and the Cold War ended by the time I grew up. But I'd imagine anybody who did live through that is not eager to repeat it, nor do they want their kids to live through it. All I can tell you is there's still time to switch this off, guys. Like, I get it. We're all going to start shooting at each other soon. It's going to be great. We're going to have this big party and everybody's going to die. But maybe we could just agree we're going to keep it conventional, right? We're not going to use nukes, all right? Let's all have our little war party, okay? And young people will die because old people can't get along. But let's just keep our fingers off that particular button. Can we reach that consensus? Anyone? Hey, I'm just a rando. I just throw these ideas out there. You guys do what you want with them. Oh boy, 2020s. We got a few more decades. And I tell you, man, Doomberg just said it when I said we're only halfway through this decade. And Doomberg even said it. Well, let's see if we can make it to the end of this decade without a nuke going off. And I'm a particularly cynical guy, but Doomberg, man, he's even more cynical than I am. And that is a bold freaking statement. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Metal Seer. Welcome to the Melonheads, Metal Seer. I thought you were a Melonhead already. I think he's renewed. Anyways, thank you so much for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. And thank you also, Zeeble Fritz, who's been a Melonhead for 17 months, talking about the AI bubble. He says it won't pop, but leak while inflating. Well, you know, right before the bubble pops, you do have to blow harder and harder and harder just to keep it inflated. Is that what's going on here this morning? Because big tech is blowing harder and harder, but the bubble's not getting any bigger at this moment. Microsoft's the move in Microsoft stock really confuses me. Meta, you could chalk that up to the tax charge, but why is Microsoft down? And if Microsoft is down because the increase in CapEx, then why is Google up? Guys, it's got me scratching my head. Maybe we just need to let the market digest this a little more and figure out what it wants for dinner. I don't really know here, but I can tell you the bubble didn't pop yesterday. That's the one thing I can definitively say, because we would all be looking at the red candle of doom if that had happened, and it didn't. So I agree. Maybe a little bit of air leaking from the bubble, though. Absolutely, Zeeble Fritz. Thank you for supporting the channel, sir. Spud Ruckus, could you describe the ruckus? Says only 60 likes to go, and we hit our goal. Let's go. Let's go. Come on, guys. Get them thumbs going. What has two thumbs and loves super chats? This guy. Thank you so much, Bud Ruckus. Appreciate the algo bump here this morning. Chris Bott, back with another big one. Wow, Chris. Chris says Carvana puts. All right, evil laugh, Dr. Evil there. First of all, thank you so much for the generosity, Chris. I appreciate that. Congratulations on those Carvana puts. They are printing this morning. I can tell you, I looked at shorting Carvana, guys. I looked into it. I'll be honest with you. I am totally like doomer on the company. When I saw that short interest was already pretty high, and I know the guys on Reddit are watching Carvana, hovering like buzzards over that one, watching that big short interest, I didn't want to get open-doored or beyond meated. And so I didn't short Carvana. I did short something else in this space. I'm not going to like talk up my book or anything like that. But something related to that one, I am keeping an eye on it. But congratulations. Again, congratulations to Lox Ganapathy over at Unicus Research. Excellent call with that company. She's been pounding the table on that one for a while. Thanks again, Chris, for supporting the channel. All right, deep breaths, everybody. I told you we were going to drink from the fire hose today. That was a lot of news. A lot of stories had to get cut this morning in order to fit this one into a reasonable time. But we got through it. Hey, thanks, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button. All right, we got to hit that 60 likes for Spud Ruckus. We got to hit that one. Get those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers, baby. Thank you very much for the generosity of the Super Chats. Thank you to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube and Patreon. You guys rock. Appreciate that. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.